This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. This week, the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center is hosting the Historians Against Slavery Conference, which is designed to facilitate dialogue, scholarship, and action in an effort to end modern-day slavery. Joining us to discuss the continuing problem of slavery in the U.S. and throughout the world are Dr. Michael Battle, National Underground Railroad Freedom Center Executive Vice President and Provost, the Freedom Center's Manager of Anti-Human Trafficking Programs, Brooke Hathaway, and Dr. Matthew Mason, Co-Director of Historians Against Slavery and Associate Professor of History at Brigham Young University. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Matt, Brooke, and Michael, thank you for being here this afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you for having me.
Matt, can you tell us the story of how Historians Against Slavery got its start?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. In the late 2000s, a great historian of abolition in the 19th century, James Brewer Stewart, was looking at retiring from McAllister College in Minnesota, and he thought about becoming an abolitionist instead of just an emeritus history professor. And he started just going anywhere that anyone would have him and talk about what we can learn today from the abolitionists he had spent decades studying and helping us all to understand. We have this rich literature on how slavery was abolished in various contexts in the 18th and 19th centuries. Why not inform the contemporary movement? We're not about to go around telling people what they should be doing, but we do believe that they can learn important lessons by informing what they do by history. And so it became more organized in 2010. James Stewart organized a board, and we've been forging ahead with a variety of initiatives since then. This conference represents the second conference we've had at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, and it's typical of the kind of things we want to do. We want to bring scholars and activists into conversation.
Matt, what were some of the lessons that he felt could be applied to the situation today?
Yeah, that's one thing that's very interesting. It depends on your particular point of view as a scholar. A lot of scholarship can inform a variety of different ways. A couple of things that have been on my mind a lot recently because of some recent scholarship. One is we can learn from the British attempts to abolish slavery throughout the world, some of the errors that they made. And then throughout most of the 19th century, the British were deeply committed to abolishing the slave trade, especially the African slave trade, but also got very involved with abolishing slavery throughout the world. And that, by and large, of course, was a very positive movement. But one of the things that recent scholarship has really highlighted is that ended up laying the groundwork for colonization of Africa by the British and French and other European powers, because they, in their kind of headlong flight drive towards abolition, they completely just ignored the sovereignty of the people involved in Africa. And so that helped lay the groundwork for imperialism. I've been having conversations with activists who go on these raids today to rescue slaves throughout the world, and one of the things that I'm constantly encouraging them to do is to learn that lesson of the unanticipated consequences of abolition in the past and respect the sovereignty of the governments they're working with and so forth. And it's been encouraging to have those sorts of conversations. That's just one example of something that's been on my mind and in conversations with activists recently.
Brooke, Matt's talking about slavery in other parts of the world. It's really hard to imagine that in this day and age that slavery still exists. How widespread is modern day slavery?
It's incredibly widespread. So the International Labor Organization estimates that there's just under 21 million slaves throughout the world today. And that's in every country throughout the world. So that includes here in the United States and other Western cultures. And so we don't often think about those. Vast majority of that is in Southeast Asia and bonded labor. But you see it in forced labor, bonded labor, domestic servitude, child labor, and then sex trafficking.
And just to add to that, the estimate is that there is about $150 billion worth of business made every year in slavery. That's a huge number of persons and a huge number of dollars that comes from an illicit trade of people. And it's something that we must put an end to.
Yeah. Brooke, some examples of modern day slavery, I guess human trafficking would be an example of what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, for example, here in the United States, any child that's being prostituted would automatically be an example of human trafficking because our federal law dictates that any person for commercial sex under the age of 18 is automatically a victim of human trafficking. Now, if there's an adult, male or female, in that same situation, if they're being compelled to do this with force, fraud or coercion, then it would be a victim of human trafficking. Other examples would be Restaviks down in Haiti. So children that are forced to work and live with families in Haiti. That's a very cultural example down in that country. Child sex tourism in Southeast Asia or brick kilns or slate factories. The list goes on and on in the types of industries that you see this. But it's very highly prevalent all throughout the world and leans more towards the forced labor side. But then still 4.5 million victims worldwide of sex trafficking.
Yeah, Michael, it seems like this has been an issue that we've been hearing more and more about in the past few years. How much has this grown as a problem?
Well, it's grown as a tremendous problem. And what is good to recognize is that people are recognizing more and more the reality of slavery. For 4 years, for example, I worked with international slavery on the African continent, and a lot of Americans are very much aware of the fact that there's slavery other parts of the world, but do not deal with the reality that there is slavery, as Brooke said, here in the context of the U.S., in the state of Ohio, in the state of Georgia, all over the country where men and women, boys and girls, are being forced into labor that they are not being paid to do and forced into sex trafficking that they do not desire to do and wish that they could become free from is a form of slavery. We have to be able to find ways collectively to raise the consciousness of people about the reality of slavery and to convince people to become activists. Brooke, for example, has used as an analogy, and I really appreciate it. She talks about how to get people to move from awareness to evangelizing by convincing other people to become really engaged in trying to end slavery. Ambassador Young, a few weeks ago at the Freedom Center, made a statement that Ambassador Andrew Young, that the only way that we're going to really put a stop to slavery in the modern context is if we could stop the money that is being made from slavery. If we could hit the bottom line of the economic flow, we can put an end to the travesty of modern day slavery.
Because $150 billion
annually made on the backs of children, men, women, boys, girls, all over the world being forced to do things.
Across all of those different forms of labor, too. So if you were to take the profits of companies that we're all familiar with, Samsung, Microsoft, Google, et cetera, if you were to combine them, it still wouldn't equal $150 billion that people are make, both untaxed and illegally. So an incredible problem. And I think the $150 billion statistics, which again comes from the International Labor Organization, what that highlights for me is that most people believe that slavery is motivated by hate. But unfortunately, in today's day and age, it's not motivated by hate. It's motivated by economics.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a money thing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
It's low risk. The laws aren't being enforced. People can get away with it. And it's a very high profit, especially when you think through the idea that slaves throughout the world can range anywhere from $5 to $300, depending on where you're talking about, right? Are you talking about the streets of Cincinnati? Are you talking about a brick kiln in India, et cetera? And so when you compare that with how much it cost to own slaves during the antebellum era, right, it was far more expensive. So today's slaves are very disposable.
And another interesting thing about it is it also feeds wars on the African continent, for example, and in Asia and other parts of the world where children are recruited into becoming soldiers as children soldiers. This is a form of slavery. Young boys are forced into a kind of slavery to fight wars. And once these young boys have finished the process of fighting wars, it's very difficult to integrate them back into society. This is one of the issues in the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo. Also in West African countries like CAR, the Central African Republic, where in Mali, young boys recruited into warfare, their fathers and mothers killed in front of them. Very often their mothers were raped in front of them, their sisters were raped in front of them, and their fathers were killed, and then these boys were forced into servitude as children's soldiers. That is a horrible way.
That's a lot of human tragedy.
That's a lot of human tragedy. A lot of human tragedy.
2 million of those 21 million slaves that I was talking about are in those situations where it's done by public governments. So be it an actual government, be it armed forces or rebel groups. And so you also have girls. The girls that were captured by Boko Haram are now thought to be used as child soldiers. So 2 million are being used by state and governments. Mm-hmm. But that still leaves a significant amount that are still in the private industry and generating those $150 billion in revenue every year.
So, Michael, what are some of the things the Freedom Center is doing to fight modern day slavery?
We're trying very hard, and I'm going to volley this over to Brooke in a moment since she leads our program. But we're trying not only to raise consciousness, but we're collaborating with major groups and organizations to enhance the knowledge about modern day slavery and trying to get people to see its devastation. Just a couple of yesterday, in fact, we had a major conference with Google. And Senator McCain's wife participated, Cindy McCain participated in that. Senator Brown from the state of Ohio, the Ohio Attorney General, was present, and a lot of people from across the country. We are raising awareness to put people where Brooke wants them to be, and that's in evangelizing about slavery.
Yes. So a lot of our work, we've been doing this. The Freedom Center has been doing anti-human trafficking work for many, many years. But we're now getting into a groove where we really know what it is that we're good at. And that is storytelling, advocacy, and engagement. So with storytelling, how do we change the hearts and minds of people so that they understand that slavery, in fact, did not end in 1865, like we're taught to believe? Then how do you grow the movement? How do you create a new underground railroad so you have more and more individuals, be it businesses, corporations, politicians, etc.? How do you get them to join you so that we create a movement similar to the Underground Railroad, where it moves from a group of lawyers, social workers, a small percent of the population that's now concerned with it, to one that the public is generally concerned with? And then lastly, engagement. How do we have real ways that people can take actions that are impactful in the fight against trafficking? So how do you go beyond simply learning or maybe donating? But how do you give people ideas and ways that they can tangibly get involved? So be that contributing to a specific organization, volunteering their time, agreeing to stop buying coffee that's made with slave labor, those types of things. So that's what the Freedom Center is really doing. And I would encourage you to look at endslaverynow.org if you want some of those ideas. That's the project run by the Freedom Center that pushes a lot of those ideas out.
And recently, during the time of the All-Star Games, we had a huge truck out in front of the Freedom Center, which symbolizes truckers against trafficking. Most people do not aware, are not aware of the fact that many of the truck drivers, the statewide haulers of goods, are very well educated on how to recognize when they see instances of slavery in some of the truck stops. And many of the trucks we found out yesterday at the Google conference are being equipped with communication devices that a trucker who sees something suspicious can instantly connect to a national hotline and notify persons who can come and rescue victims. They are also trying to get bus drivers and cab drivers as well educated. Delta Airlines, as an airline, is one of the first of the major airlines that is actively engaged in teaching its pilots and airline attendants how to recognize instances when people are being forced on planes and they're very uncomfortable when they're seen with people that they don't necessarily belong with, to how to identify and report.
So it's raising awareness.
Raising awareness.
And also saying, if you see something that you think is suspicious, report it.
If you see it, say something. See something, say something. Do something
really
about it.
Really applies here, doesn't it?
Yes, sir, it does.
Now, unfortunately, we've lost our connection with Matt.
Okay.
Now, Matt's organization talks about using history to make slavery history. What do you think of that approach? Is it good to look at the lessons of the past?
I think it's absolutely good to look at the lessons. If you heard what Matt said in his first comments about how this movement was started by a scholar who wanted to become an abolitionist and wanted to avoid some of the errors of previous abolitionists, particularly how abolitionists end up becoming embracers of colonialism and imperialism. If we don't listen to the lessons of the past, we are bound to repeat the lessons of the past. Who better than a group of scholars, educators, to deal with the reality that slavery, as Brooke said earlier, has not ended. It still exists, and we have to be able to stop it with people like you in the media, people like historians and scholars, people like Brooke and what she's doing at the Freedom Center. We must stop this in this generation. We must stop it.
So what are some of the successes that the Freedom Center has seen in terms of fighting modern day slavery?
Yeah, we do a lot of work with different partners. And as you were alluding to, a lot of our work is about linking and lifting up partners that are on the ground reacting to this. So for example, I just returned from a trip to Thailand and Taiwan, where I was visiting with different heroes who had earned the Department of State award called a Trafficking in Persons Hero, where I was seeing what they were doing on the ground and the successes that they're having. So for example, in Thailand, I was meeting with a gentleman who's working with migrant workers that are often trafficked and forced to work on shipping boats that are then headed from Thailand into Indonesia. I met with men that had been imprisoned on these ships for up to 12 years, and it was significant. But what's powerful is the amount of arrests that are now happening in Thailand to help combat that because the media is starting to report on it more. Or, for example, we were in Taiwan, and I was meeting with a Vietnamese reverend who started some work in Taiwan because he had seen so many mail order brides coming from Vietnam to Taiwan. And so when he opened his office over a dozen years ago, he saw a lot of that. He now very little works with women that are coming over as brides and being forced to work because the government of Taiwan has modified their arrangements around that. Now, instead, he's working with a lot more migrant laborers who are forced to work, again, on fishing boats and seafood processing plants and that type of thing. So when we see success, it's incredible, and it can be done. And those two stories show me that it can be done if you have tailored, targeted campaigns against them. But what we know is that then that labor and that desire to still make profit shifts to new ways. So traffickers and slavers are consistently morphing and evolving. And so as activists and as abolitionists of today, we have to constantly keep up with that. Before Matt was lost on the phone, he was.
And well, you have him back now.
Oh, so great. Hi, Matt. Jim Stewart, who started the organization Historians Against Slavery, always reminds me of this wonderful abolitionist, Wendell Phillips, who on the passage of the 13th Amendment, he claimed that we've abolished the slave, but the master remains. So we've abolished this legal category of slaver, but the desire to enslave somebody and that person who wants to make the economic profit remains. And so we as abolitionists, we as activists today have to keep up with the ever-changing style of their slaving.
And Matt, what are some of the successes your organization has seen in fighting modern-day slavery?
It's tended to come in areas of both raising awareness and informing current activists. So things like our conferences do help to raise awareness. We also have a speakers bureau where we will send anybody anywhere within reason to go and speak about connecting past and present. And that has been really useful. We've been able to do that on college campuses and in high schools and so forth. And then in kind of more informal, but as well as organized ways like this conference, conversations with activists right now and what they can learn from the past. You may have developed this at this point while I was gone, but I did want to circle back to one thing we were talking about earlier that we can learn from the past. This idea that we need to get people to think of slavery not as just something that happens in Southeast Asia or somewhere else besides the United States. It's a CIA or it's a State Department problem. It's not a United States the domestic problem. That's one thing that activists in the 19th century had to learn, is that you can only move, the sad truth is, you can only move people so far by straight compassion for victims that seem distant to them. You need to be able to connect these issues to their everyday lives and their concerns for their own rights and so forth. And so things like a runaway slave, when a runaway slave shows up in your town, then suddenly slavery doesn't feel so distant. And activists then were able to take advantage of that. And so that's something we can learn from the past. And it echoes something we were talking about earlier before I got lost.
Yeah, and it echoes something Michael was saying about it. If you see suspicious behavior, you think that there's some kind of slavery activity going on, report it.
Right.
And also form underground railroads in the modern day context. The airline industry with Delta has formed a kind of underground railroad where it allows for passage of people who can be documented to have been in the process of escaping from slavery. An underground movement is simply a movement that is somewhat beneath the surface in the sense that it has some secrecy in order to protect individuals who are escaping. Radio announcers can be a part of an underground media railroad. Truckers, underground truckers railroad. There are a lot of ways to be in the underground movement. It's interesting that even the Syrians who have been trapped in Hungary and trying to get to other parts of Europe were referred to as people participating in an underground movement with regard to the people who were trying to help them get to other countries in the world. So underground is a theme that we need to highlight. And the conference is still open for registration. I do want to mention that so that the historians against slavery will know that we're pushing the fact that people can still register for the conference by going on the website at the Freedom Center and register for the luncheon and other events during this exciting conference.
And Michael, what's the website?
Freedomcenter.org.
Okay. And there's a link to that at WVXU.org as well. Matt, give us a few of the examples, some of the topics that you'll be discussing at this conference.
Sure. We'll be one of the philosophies behind the conference is to, as often as possible, put activists and scholars on the same panel. And we have a variety of panels that do that sort of thing, so that ask questions about the upside and the downside, for instance, of using the term slavery. The contemporary slavery is probably better known as human trafficking, and some people are a little reluctant to use the loaded word slavery for what's happening in the world today. So we have a whole panel devoted to exploring how accurate that term is, how useful it is, and so forth. We have other panels, one of our first session that is for the whole conference is a plenary session, is devoted to linking activism and the academy, trying to explore this idea of getting scholars out of ivory towers and into real world problems and so forth. And then we have a whole variety of more topical things on children and slavery, on business and slavery, on the prison system and how legacies of slavery and human rights abuses that have been much in the news lately. We'll spend a whole panel exploring those sorts of questions.
And this is September 24th through 26th. Is that right, Matt?
Correct. We have a keynote speech on the 24th, and then the panels will be on the 25th and 26th.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Michael Battle, National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, Executive Vice President and Provost, the Freedom Center's Manager of Anti-Human Trafficking Programs, Brooke Hathaway, and Dr. Matthew Mason, Co-Director of Historians Against Slavery and Associate Professor of History at Brigham Young University. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. The technical director was Rick Andrus. I'm Mark Haney.